However, there are teachings that one should one should feel contentment and be satisfied.
Detachment.
One should generate detachment. This has to do with those objects that should, this is within the context of these objects being objects that one should separate from. Thus, one needs to make a difference between practices that need to be assumed and those that need to be stopped. How does one
declare chatham?
I hope so. Does mindfulness of the body prohibit regard for healthful maintenance of the body, and does it prohibit pleasure in its functioning at maximum potential? When it is advised that one view the body as having a nature of suffering, it's not being advised that one neglect the body. As Aryadeva says in his 400 stanzas, even though the body is to be viewed as an enemy, one must rely on it, make use of it. Because in dependence upon this body, one can achieve great aims.
As
Shantideva says, one has to nourish and further this body so that it can serve as a means to bring about the welfare of other sentient beings. Why is it that non-virtuous emotions such as desire and hatred disappear when the wisdom of emptiness is realized, and virtuous emotions such as compassion do not? This has to do with what I was saying earlier about whether the consciousness is backed up by valid cognition or not. Even if at a time of feeling compassion, one can have some sort of afflictive emotion mixed in with it, the very basis of it is not something that is afflicted. Even though when, for instance, one gets angry, one has some reason for getting angry, some superficial reason such as that this person harmed me, if one looks into it in detail, those reasons are incorrect. Thus, in terms of a deeper perspective, it would be better not to get angry. But then in Tantra, there's something called the using of hatred in the path. Here, however, one has to make a difference. The causal motivation here is still compassion, although the motivation at the time of the particular deed may be hatred.
That's
when one sustains such meditative stabilization as I was describing at the end of the last session, one is seeking to sustain meditative stabilization, meditative stabilization in the meditative session. How long should that session, should those sessions be each day? It said that it's best for the sessions at the beginning to be short and many.
If one
attempts long sessions in the beginning, since one's mind is not serviceable, it is easy for the mind to fall into a faulty form of meditative stabilization. Thus, it's better to meditate just for 10 or 15 minutes. But to do that many times. The best time is in the morning. But just like keeping a fire going so that you can use it at various times, you have to, keep the continuum of it going so that what is gained in the earlier practice is not entirely lost by you by the time you begin the next one. A fully qualified person doesn't need too much time to accomplish this. It could be done in a year or half a year. This is in terms of someone who has all of the concordant circumstances. When one has meditated in this manner and has reached the ninth level, that of setting an equipoise, what is it that then is done? With regard to this, one need, there is the topic of the unfavorable states of mind and body, which we usually have in our minds and bodies, that prevent them from being serviceable in a virtuous direction. Now, our minds in our present states are not serviceable in whatever direction we want to use them. But through this practice, this unserviceability of mind becomes lesser in strength. One generates an antidote to the unserviceability of the mind, this being called mental pliancy. As a sign that one is about to achieve mental pliancy, one has a sense of the brain tingling. It's not something that's unpleasant, it's pleasant.
Deo ya di kasore lung gi kheba jwa ta kana sugu na lo lung lo dang kheba chung yo sare.
This comes because there's a wind or inner air energy that pervades the body.
Tan nam ji pe she ti she re ta shan rong go ya la ma chao du sha wa slo re ta.
The
ta shan ni ngi shing lo ta.
The example that's usually used is of a warm hand being placed on top of a monk's head after it's been shaved, or anyone's head. So for those here who know that, they have some sense of this. This is a sign just prior to the arising of such mental pliancy.
People
have frequently spoken about getting certain types of feelings and so forth prior to developing meditative stabilization. Independence upon the generation of this serviceability of mind, this mental pliancy, this acts as a cause of the circulation in the body of a favorable wind or energy. This generates physical pliancy. Through the circulation of this wind throughout the body, this makes serviceable the unserviceable or unfavorable physical states and generating thus physical pliancy. Through generating physical, the generation of physical pliancy causes the generation of a physical bliss throughout the body. This has no connection with bliss and so forth as it is described in Tantra. This has nothing to do with concentrating on the channels and winds and so forth. This has to do with withdrawing and concentrating the mind. When the sense of physical bliss pervades the body, this induces a mental bliss. At first, this mental pliancy is a little bit too excited, but then gradually it becomes more steady, and one attains a non-fluctuating bliss of meditative stabilization.
When
one attains this non-fluctuating pliancy, then one has a fully qualified calm abiding of the mind.
That And she took him gear, the Chatamosum gear, the use sang a or the digging that to get number shy at the music solid with shy at the that sim that dingin's in combat to did the doors, Patrick, that solid the doors, noon do you say?
When one achieves such meditative stabilization in the mind, the what do you say, objects such as forms and so forth, and the good and bad objects that usually generate desire and hatred don't appear to be so solid, but appear to be, lighter.
Any you tell ya, but things in Yamutan, you tell about to step in, you'd have to spatch that, sim namsan to nang to do you yourself.
And when one views that object with one's meditative stabilization, the object seems to dissolve of its own accord, and one's mind seems to withdraw of its own accord. Thus at that time there's no danger from the usual scattering of the mind outside.
And as the
distractions outside lessen, and what do you say, one's mind is more withdrawn inside, or one has. One's inner conceptions also become pacified. Pacification of the distraction outside, one tends to remain more in the entity of mere luminosity and knowing, whereby the conceptions are, one's inner conceptions are pacified also. When conceptions are generated, that even when conceptions are generated, they are generated like a bubble. They aren't able to keep their continuum going. They immediately dissolve. And when one is in meditative equipoise, one has no sense of one's body. One's body doesn't appear at all, but has a sense of being dissolved into space. So then in terms of the value of calm abiding, is it any of the paths, does it mark the attainment of any of the paths of any of the three vehicles? It does not. As was said earlier, the cultivation of calm abiding is common to both Buddhist, non-Buddhist, and non-Buddhist.
Oh yeah.
From the point of view of the nature of the mind itself, it hasn't become highly elevated. However, there is a great purpose in developing calm abiding.
Oh yeah.
So having attained calm abiding, what path should one cultivate?
Mm.
The there are two types of modes of progress on the path in dependence upon calm abiding, one mundane and the other super mundane.
Tā jīgdīmbē lāṃ jūsū sāyātī kāsūrē, nāngbēn lāṃsīk mīsē kē mārē, tā hō.
With regard to the mundane mode of procedure, the Buddhists have no special additional things to say.
Tā dī jīgdīmbē lāṃ jūsū sāyātī shirāg nāpa jīgdā lāṃ kōpatirē.
The mundane mode of procedure is to cultivate meditation in which one views one's own level as gross and a higher level of consciousness as more peaceful. Now for this one needs to understand the three realms and nine levels. The lowest of the levels is attained when one attains the first preparation to the first concentration. This is called the not unable preparation. The feeling that accompanies it is a neutral feeling. Then after that there's the achievement of the actual first concentration. And in order to attain the first concentration, one has to pass through six mental contemplations, these being the mental contemplation of individual knowledge of the character, mental contemplation arisen from belief. Etc. Up to this point, one has been meditating in the manner of stabilizing meditation. But at this point, one is beginning the cultivation of special insight and analyzes.
So that's ten years old, which is 10 years old, sadly, Kasore.
And what one is analyzing is that one is viewing the level of the first concentration as being peaceful by way of many factors, by way of many qualities, and is viewing the lower level, the desire realm, as being gross by way of many attributes. And through viewing the level of the first concentration as peaceful and the lower level of the desire realm as gross, one gradually develops a power of mind such that one can overcome the manifest form of the afflictions with respect to the desire realm, these having been divided into nine parts. Gradually one comes to be able to suppress all nine levels of the afflictions with respect to the desire realm, and one attains the actual first concentration. And this is the mode of procedure by which one advances through the second, third, and fourth concentrations, and then the limit, what do you say, the formless absorptions of limitless space, limitless consciousness, nothingness, and peak of cyclic existence. As was said earlier, there is no definiteness with respect to cyclic existence. Thus, all of us are persons who have attained these higher levels of mind. However, those have deteriorated with being reborn in the desire realm.
Yeah, yeah. That was the equal shine to dandy. That didn't dare a lamb to dandy, now shine is sim day. Any deponany, yana, densi, lamb dog nalia, check, densi, lamb dog nalia, so dove, lamb dog yard. Oil. Any that delays of the dandy, any don't you dove, that lamb dog yard.
Then, with respect to the mode of procedure of the path that, based on the mind of calm abiding, advances through the supramundane special insight, one cultivates, what do you say, special insight with respect to the Four Noble Truths and, what do you say, selflessness, and beyond that, the subtle emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Except that one has switched the object, one still
has...
Except for switching the mode of thinking, one builds this meditation on top of the former stable mind of calm abiding, and at this point analyzes with individual investigation the objects.
Even though
one in the process of achieving calm abiding through stabilizing meditation had eliminated the laxity and excitement that would interfere with the process of developing calm abiding, here when one begins to analyze, there is another type of laxity and excitement that can again come in. Even though the laxity and the excitement that occur at this time are not exactly like the laxity and excitement that occurred earlier and were gotten rid of, it is necessary to pass through the four mental engagements again. But then the power of analysis itself gradually comes to be able to induce physical and mental pliancy as was just described with respect to calm abiding. And when the bliss of mental and physical pliancy, which is induced by the power of analysis itself, is generated, that marks the generation of special insight. And from that point, one has a union of calm abiding and special insight. In terms of the weapons that one needs, one has now fully qualified weapons. And what one is now ascertaining through these powerful instruments is the subtle emptiness. So that's the explanation of the achievement of meditative stabilization, this being connected with the topic of the four legs of manifestation. Next are the five powers or five faculties, these being faith, effort, mindfulness, meditative stabilization, and wisdom. These same five, faith, effort, mindfulness, meditative stabilization, and wisdom, are posited as the five faculties when they're at the first two levels of the path of preparation, those called heek and peak, and then these same five, when they have increased in their capacity to overcome the unfavorable at the levels called forbearance and supreme mundane qualities of the path of preparation are called the five forces. So what are these five? In the common way, faith is faith with respect to the
form.
The faith with respect to what is to be adopted and what is to be discarded from among the Four Noble Truths. And the effort which is enthusiasm for adopting and discarding what is appropriate among the Four Truths. Mindfulness, which is a non-forgetfulness of mind with respect to such adopting and discarding. And the meditative stabilization of one-pointedness of mind with respect to those. And the wisdom which is the individual analysis of those. In terms of the great vehicle, as described in Maitreya's Ornament for Clear Realization, faith is faith for the Buddha and so forth. But the faith here in the Great Vehicle has its own unique qualities. The refuge in the Great Vehicle is within the context of observing all sentient beings. Therefore, it is said that the object of observation here is omnipresent. And one is asserting a Buddhahood as one's own object of attainment. And the realization of enlightenment or
Pajit
And through this, the refuge in the great vehicle outshines that of the hearers and so forth. Then there's the effort which is enthusiasm with respect to the practice of giving and so forth, the perfections. Then there is the mindfulness, which is the non-forgetfulness of the altruistic intention to become enlightened. And a meditative stabilization is a non-conceptual version of it. And the wisdom that knows non-inherent. The wisdom that knows the unapprehendability of all phenomena as truly established. Similarly, when a bodhisattva cultivates the four establishments in mindfulness, he or she cultivates them not just with respect to himself or herself, but with respect to all sentient beings. Thus, except for a difference of vastness of thought and the mode of procedure of the objects of observation, the 37 harmonies to enlightenment are similarly practiced by everyone. Then there are the seven branches of enlightenment that occur at the time of the path of seeing. I'm not going to go into these in detail. These seven branches of enlightenment are mindfulness, discrimination of phenomena, effort, joy, suppleness, meditative stabilization, and equanimity. Then at the time of the path of seeing and the path of meditation, there is the Eightfold Path. So I'm not going to again go into detail on them. These are correct views, correct realization, correct speech, correct aims of actions, correct livelihood, correct effort, correct mindfulness, and correct meditative stabilization. It is through the 37 harmonies of enlightenment that one can attain the state of a foe destroyer in arhat. Except for difference with respect to what one is ascertaining and settling with respect to selflessness, such topics as these are the same for everyone. So then what is the mode of procedure on the Bodhisattva path? This begins with the topic of the altruistic intention to achieve enlightenment, in which one values others more than oneself. This is not a case of self-centeredly wishing for seeking one's own enlightenment, but is what one is seeking for the enlightenment of all sentient beings. When one generates this attitude, one enters among the number of bodhisattvas, and when one, and until, if when one has not generated this attitude, there is no way that one can be a bodhisattva.
Oh yeah.
This attitude is, has really great power. It not only is helpful for people practicing religions, but is also helpful for people who are just concerned with the affairs of this lifetime. The root of all happiness is this attitude of altruism, as I'm always saying. So now, in terms of presenting, what do you say, laying out a presentation of this attitude, in terms of its mode of generation, there's a presentation of four causes, four conditions, and four powers. I'm not going to go into these. In terms of how to train in this attitude, there was one mode of training which was transmitted from or through Maitreya and the Sangha, which is the quintessential instructions, the seven cause and effect quintessential instructions, and another which was transmitted through Manjushri and Nagarjuna and Shantideva, which is the equalizing and switching of self and other. So then what is the entity of this altruistic mind of enlightenment, this bodhicitta? As Maitreya says in his ornament for clear realization, the altruistic mind of enlightenment, this bodhicitta, is the wish for complete perfect enlightenment for the sake of others. Then Haribhadran, his clear meaning commentary on that text, raises the qualm that the word wish, the wish for complete perfect enlightenment for the sake of others, the word wish was used, and that since the word, what do you say, wishes or desires are mental factors, and the mind, this altruistic mind of enlightenment is a mind, how does one settle this contradiction?
And the Kongi, tell you, land the Oh.
And Haribhadra answers that the name of that which assists it is given to it in the sense that
Karsama 아니 드부선길 따르스.
Well, first of all, the name of the cause is given to the effect in that the aspiration for others toward others' welfare serves as a cause for the generation of this mind, and thus the name of the aspiration, the wish, it, the cause is given to the effect, the altruistic mind of enlightenment.